Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, happy Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the show. A little chilly out there this morning. It was 36 when I got outside to the truck, and I saw a lot of frost, especially as I came through the Chesterfield Valley. A lot of frost on car windows there through the valley on the, like the car lots. As I passed them down through there, you could see it. So just so you know, you might face a little bit of a hard freeze in some areas, as we were warned yesterday. It means the end of the growing season.
Yeah, people bringing in their plants that they were all excited about. And I mean, we knew this would happen, but it's when it happens, you're still somehow, it feels like you're caught off guard.
Yeah.
Why is that? I don't know.
I don't know either. I think you could argue that after the Brett Baer interview yesterday, it's the end of Kamala's growing season. Don't you think?
Wow, what an interview.
I think that has effectively frosted any hope that she might have had that she was going to convince anybody on Fox that she was up to the job.
I was so proud of the way he handled that interview.
Ask me any question. Go ahead. Ask me any question.
What's your stance on illegal immigration?
Donald Trump.
No, what's your stance on abortion?
Donald Trump.
But were you raised in a middle class family? She didn't say that one time. Well, you know what, though? Here's the thing. I may have been, this is how she responds. I may have been vice president for the last 3.5 years, but Donald Trump, he's been running.
For office.
So he's to blame.
Now, Brett, you know what I'm talking about. No, Madam Vice President, I don't.
What are you talking about?
Tell me what the hell you're saying. Nobody watching this has any idea what the hell you're talking about.
And you know what's funny? Oh. And I was watching a little bit of the commentary afterward, and one of them said there was a point where Kamala made some comment to the effect of, like, whatever happens during your administration, you're to blame. It's like, perfect. I hope the Trump campaign has already snatched that up and made it into an ad for him.
Brett missed a couple of opportunities. And, you know, as I was listening to it, I was thinking to myself, oh, Brett, you should have done this. And, oh, Brett, you should have done that. And then afterwards, I get to the, I watched the interview with Brett afterwards where he explains that they were supposed to start at 5. They didn't start till almost 5:15 or 5:17, and they were done at 5:35. He got about 10 or 12 minutes with her instead of 30.
Yeah,
he basically had no time, and she filibustered with her word salad and complaining against Donald Trump no matter what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Her talking point was, but Donald Trump.
Right. And so she would just continue to speak, really not saying anything. And then if he would try to redirect and actually ask a question, she'd say, I'd like to finish what I'm saying. And
yes.
I'm sure all the feminists were like, you go, Kamala. And did you see, too, that he was mentioning that all of, I guess, her staff was standing in front of him off camera, of course, and doing, you know, moving their hands around in a circle, which, of course, would indicate rap, get out. You're done with the interview. So he's watching,
you know,
all of them pressuring him.
As a journalist who's been in that situation before, I'm sure you have, but certainly as an anchor who's been in that situation before, when you've got somebody giving you one of these because you were given X amount of time with the candidate, and then you've got to wrap up what you're doing and move on.
You mean like what Carl does sometimes?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what she had to do next at that moment. If I'm Brett Baer, if he's really thinking this through, he would have just kept asking her questions and forced one of her staff members to walk into the frame to end the interview. I'm not quite sure why he did that. At that point, I'm thinking, I've got no information out of her. They filibustered me to begin with because they delayed the start of the... He compared it, and I thought it was a good analogy, to trying to ice the kicker. Calling a timeout right before the kicker has to kick, so they have to think about it a little more. So instead of starting at 5, they start at 5:15 or 5:16. He knew they were done at 5:30. It just compressed all the time that he had into a shorter period of time. He should have just kept going.
Well, what he almost should have done is, and maybe this would, well, they're not going to get another interview with her, so let's be real. That was probably the only interview they'd ever have. But I almost wish he would have said, now I just want to be transparent here, because we value that here with our viewers. I see her staff off camera right now, and they're waving to me, signaling for me to wrap. But, you know, Madam Vice President, you arrived here 10 to 15 minutes late for this interview. We were told we would have 30 minutes to chat with you. We're going to continue on.
Yeah,
I would have loved if he had said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because obviously we didn't know about them wrapping him until after the interview.
I thought Brett did a fairly commendable job given the constraints of it. I didn't think it when I first listened to it, but then I realized what else was going on in the background. And you know that is what it is. And we've got all the sound bites from it this morning. So we're going to get to all that for you. We got a great show. We got good stuff coming up just a little later. We're going to talk to State Senator Nick Schroer, who's uncovered some unbelievable stuff in a local school district that's going on with this DEI stuff. If you don't think your kids are being discriminated against every single day in the name of fairness, you're blind to what's going on in the world. We'll get Nick on here in the 7 o'clock hour. But right now, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
We've been on the rapper as a press secretary interviewing a president, and you know, I'm talking like four people waving their hands, like it's got to stop.
Yeah, that was it. He was talking to the panel afterwards, saying there are four people behind me giving me one of these big rap signs. And if you're watching on the Facebook feed, you see Carl doing that to me all the time. So that Brett's like, that was kind of distracting, right?
You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
I thought that was probably one of the stronger points that Brett Baer made. He made it pretty brilliantly because he had just gotten done asking her about her problems with Donald Trump, where she claims he's not fit for office. Well, when did you notice Joe Biden wasn't fit for office?
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you.
Thank you. True. This is true. But Donald Trump.
Now, some St. Louis families are receiving monthly $500 checks again. The city's guaranteed basic income program is halted by a lawsuit, but the city says private money is now allowing them to cut checks again.
Yeah. Is there a Democrat alive that won't do anything they have to do to circumvent the court to try to give away taxpayer money illegally? I think that's a fair question. The Biden administration just announced they're cutting more student debt, even though the courts have slapped them down twice. The United States Supreme Court has said, that's not legal. You don't have the power to do that. So they keep trying to find different ways to do it. And here's this garbage where she's giving away American taxpayer money from the COVID Relief Act in some fake guaranteed income where she's falsely inflating people's income for a year. And then when the money runs out, what does she think they're going to do? They're going to be poorer than they were when they started, number one. But the bigger issue is what she's doing is illegal. And I don't care if it's Jack Dorsey or whatever. They found some idiot with more money than sense who's funding this thing through November.
Mm-hmm.
One time it was Dorsey. Now they won't say who it is. Channel 4 said yesterday they had filed a Freedom of Information request, a Sunshine Act request, to find out the name of the donor.
Good for them.
I think that's got to be public information, right? How can you not give away the name of that individual? We need to know who it is. Is it Rex Singfeld? Highly unlikely. Who else is out there in St. Louis that's rich enough to just fund giveaways to 500 people at $500 a month for the next month and a half.
I understand at times people need a leg up. For example, people who have been devastated by Hurricane Helene, Hurricane Milton, something like that. They should be getting payments like that, which surprisingly, well, not surprisingly, they're not. But in this case, you're just giving someone a fish. You're not teaching them to fish. And that's the problem. That's the problem with the way that the Democrats like to do things is you think you're solving the problem, but you're not. It's a temporary fix. Who knows what that money is going to go toward? And once it runs out, because you haven't, quote unquote, taught them to fish, they're right back in the same position.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe they've you know how they say if you increase your income that you're, it's not like it actually feels as though you are because you find more ways to spend the money, right? It's not like you end up saving a bunch of it. It's the same thing. They might increase their spending that amount on things that are not absolutely necessary. Yeah. Then when the money runs out, they're still wanting to live that lifestyle. So now they're actually in an even worse position.
Yeah, it's not. None of it makes any sense. It's a payoff program to constituents.
Wrap it up,
that's
Mark Cox.
That's all it is.
Now, see, give them the signal. You got to do the hand.
Carl's in the background giving me one of these. So that means I got to go into a break, I guess. Excuse me, Madam Vice President. I've got to... your staff is giving me a hard rap over here because they don't want me to ask you any more hard questions because you can't answer any of them anyway. Donald Trump, that was her answer yesterday. All right, let's get to the national anthem here, Carl.
As requested by Amy.
Yes.
She wanted to hear Chris Stapleton.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why, if he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States, why is that happening?
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
I know, but
it's not supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a cakewalk.
So are they misguided, the 50%?
What does that mean?
Are they stupid?
God, I would never say that about the American people. And in fact, if you listen to Donald Trump, if you watch any of his rallies, he's the one who tends to demean and belittle and diminish the American people. He's the one who talks about an enemy within, an enemy within, talking about the American people. Suggesting he would turn the American military on the American people.
Yeah, we didn't let that play out all the way, but she's like, Brett, you know what I'm talking about. Brett, you know what I'm talking about. He goes, no, I don't, Mr. Vice President. What are you talking about? I had no idea what she's talking about. Because nobody would have any idea what she's talking about. What does any of that mean? Nothing she said answered the question. You just said that he was the most deplorable individual you've ever met and a direct threat to the democracy of the United States. So what do you say to the 50% of people who support him? Are they stupid? Well, I would never say that about the American people. I mean, they finally got that answer out of her. But what you're saying is they're too stupid to understand that he would... be a threat to democracy. Somebody should probably kill him. It's probably what she was suggesting. I mean, that's the rhetoric that I think led to the first two assassination attempts.
Right. She, I would say, spews the dangerous rhetoric that she accuses Donald Trump of talking about at his rallies. And she really didn't directly answer any of the questions. Like, for example, when they were talking about the transgender surgeries for the prisoners paid for by the taxpayers, she would just say things like, well, I'll follow federal law. Well, what about Tim Walz? You chose him as your running mate. He made sure that happened in the state of Minnesota. Why would you do that? Well, he and I were going to both follow federal law. Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
So what's your stance on that? Yeah. I'm not clear.
She's happy with the federal law, so she can avoid saying she supports it
right.
By just saying she supports whatever the federal law is.
Even though she just said it on that trans whatever she was doing.
Yeah.
That interview.
Well, that was from 2019.
Oh, that shoot, that's, she was, that's, they were flipping back to that.
Yes,
that's right.
That's
okay.
When she
I thought
was
she had
running,
just done one, too.
When she was running for president the first time is when she made those comments that she personally intervened as attorney general in California to make sure that a guy on death row who had murdered two individuals, who was going to die anyway for his crime, was able to get breast augmentation and get surgery.
I just covered a story like that. I want to say it was out of Indiana. So this is absolutely happening under the Harris-Biden administration. Do
and
not
they're
be
happy
fooled.
About it. They're
yeah,
happy
absolutely.
About it. That's the thing about it. That's what they want to lie to you about all the time. I'm going to get to a lot more of this interview. I mean, it was sad that this was promoted as 30 minutes, and the Democrat Party that controls her knew how dangerous that was, and they were desperate to end it rapidly because they could hear her getting angry and melting down and not answering the questions, and they didn't like her being pushed on things like, when did you first notice Joe Biden's faculties appearing diminished? I mean, old George Clooney certainly noticed it, and you supposedly sat in meetings with this guy every day for 3.5 years. Are you kidding me? Of course you knew it. You were counting down the time till you could stab him in the back and take over. That's what she was. That's the real answer to that issue right there. We're going to get to Kim on a Whim when we come back. Stay tuned.
Kim on a Whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
You know all those political signs you've been driving by in your neighborhood?
Oh,
I've even
yeah.
seen them on the side of the interstate. Have you ever wondered how effective are those signs? Are they really making an impact on who someone might be voting for? Because I've definitely asked myself that question.
I hope. I thought about that the other day as I was driving back from Arkansas. Because there are a lot of pro-Trump and vote no on three signs up and down between I-44, between here and Arkansas. There's a lot of them. But does it really make a difference? I don't know.
Well, I know when you and I were talking about that, I had made some comment about how, you know, in my neighborhood, there's, I don't know, maybe 7 to 9 no on three signs, including at our home. And I think there's one yes on three. And my take was, if the majority of your neighbors have a no on three, there will be people out there who have no problem putting their yes on three sign in their yard smack dab in the middle of the others. But there are plenty of people who are just going to want to follow the crowd, and they're nervous to be that one person who kind of goes against the grain.
Yeah.
So it, in that sense, could have some sort of an impact. Well, I actually have to give my brother-in-law credit for this, because he was the one who we were talking yesterday, and he mentioned this. He's like, how effective are those signs? I thought, okay, well, let me look into that. Well, turns out they've looked into this. This is a 2015 study. Political science professor at Columbia University, he said, yeah, they can make a difference, but it's very small. It's somewhere between 1 and 2 percentage points on average. So it's not going to be some earth-shattering difference. But if it's, say, a dead heat, that could be
that
it.
Could be a
it
difference.
Could be it. A lot of it is name recognition, as you might imagine. And I want to get into that a little bit more, but I found an interesting story talking about kind of when this whole thing started. Listen to this.
Some of the first signs appeared in the U.S. during the presidential campaign in 1824, when John Quincy Adams convinced voters to put up his signs in their yard. Over time, they've continued to be one of the most commonly used campaign tools, even with the rise of digital media.
Well, and you know what a lot of these candidates love about yard signs? They're free. I mean, you pay for the signs, but it's not like you're paying for a TV ad
over
to keep running
again.
Over and over and yeah. over again. You pay to print the sign, which I'm sure nothing compared to what you're paying for some of these advertisements like the billboards. And then there you go. So have you heard of the Ben Griffin experiment?
I have not. Ben Griffin.
Ben Griffin. Okay. Here's what happened. There was a professor at Vanderbilt University who did this study in 2011 to see how effective these yard signs are. So what she did is she created this fake county council candidate named Ben Griffin. And what she did was she planted all sorts of signs with that name, Ben Griffin, on lawns, as well as this well-trafficked street that just so happened to be near a school. A survey was mailed out a few days later by the school's Parent Teacher Association asking the people, the respondents, hey, you know, list your top choices for the county's at-large council seats. There were five real candidates who were listed along with the fake Ben Griffin and some other made-up name. Listen to this. Nearly a quarter of the respondents listed the fake Ben Griffin among their top three picks. Not a clue what this guy stands for. Just the name recognition enough, I guess, made people want to vote for him. Isn't that wild that you don't even look into his policies because he wouldn't Nothing. Have had any, considering he was a fake candidate?
Right.
Yeah, I would hope that people would see those signs and it would spur some thought, like trigger thought, like, I need to look into that more.
You'd think.
But why wouldn't it? Why? Well, I don't think you would ever vote for somebody just because you drove down the street and saw the sign. The sign tells you nothing about them except their name and what position they're running for.
In fact, I read in this article that those signs that just have the name mm-hmm. and what they're running for, they're way more effective than if you try to litter that sign with, you know, pro this, anti this, whatever, because that gets just too convoluted.
I mean, name recognition.
Yeah, some people right. are walking their dog by that sign and they may take an extra few seconds to read it, but a lot of people are just driving by and you're not paying close enough attention. So the most effective signs, they say, are very colorful. And they just have the name, big old name right there on the sign with, yeah, what they're running for.
My favorite video on Facebook these days is where somebody's dog is watering the Kamala Harris sign.
I've not seen that. It's interesting because I think we're going to start seeing more signs because we're down to the last, well, not even 3 weeks away from the election.
Maybe, I think they were slow to roll out the signs.
What, the Amendment 3?
Yeah, the Amendment 3 sign, the no on Amendment 3 signs. I've seen a few yes on Amendment 3 signs. I saw a very irritating ad yesterday on TV with a woman who clearly appeared to be sitting in a church pew talking about family and faith and an ectopic pregnancy and that we need to vote yes on Amendment 3 because we need to be common sense about this and make sure that other women can get the medical services that I got when I had an ectopic pregnancy.
You're completely misinformed.
It's complete lies.
It's lies.
A complete lie.
Right.
But she looks like a church-going woman sitting in a church pew saying this with a high neck collar on and all this stuff like she's some prim and proper churchgoer. No churchgoer should support Amendment 3.
I know plenty of people, on demand.
Not
at my church, although I'm sure there are some, but I know plenty of people, including a text thread, I'm not going to go into detail about it, but a text thread with somebody in the church, Catholic church, and this is not just Catholics, okay? This is all, from every background, people who go to church on Sunday are still going to somehow think that abortion is okay. And it's wild to me. And a lot of the argument is, well, separation of church and state. Can I just please, PSA, and I tweeted about this last night because I just am frustrated with people trying to say this and they don't even know the truth.
They just don't understand it.
Separation of church and state was specifically designed to keep the government from interfering with the way that you're worshiping. It had nothing to do with preventing churches from speaking out on these moral issues like Amendment 3. So if your pastor or your priest is sitting there from the pulpit trying to say, well, this is why we can't talk about it, that's nonsense.
It's a lie.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
In fact, that should borderline be, and I'm not trying to be dramatic, but that should almost be a red flag if you've heard nothing about abortion. If you go sit at that church every single Sunday and your leader, your pastor has not ever uttered the words about abortion, that's awful. I mean, that's terrible. So people need to be speaking out about this. And the whole ectopic pregnancy and miscarriage care, that is so different than an abortion. Even with it banned in Missouri right now, there's still care for that. Despite what some moron, I'm sorry, but that's the word I'm going to say. Despite what he tried to tell me when he wanted me to sign that initiative petition that they were, you know, getting signatures for earlier this year, thank goodness I knew my facts and I said, you are lying. You are lying to me and I'll guarantee you're lying to other people.
And the ads are lying. And the ads are lying on purpose, just like they're lying about, gambling, supporting the schools.
Yep.
They have no proof of it. I was shocked. I know he's being paid to do it. I was shocked the other day to see an ad with, I'm pretty sure, Ozzie Smith on it, encouraging people to vote for this gambling, this internet gambling bill. And I'm like, really? What? Are you kidding me?
How much was he paid to do that?
I don't know. A lot, I'm sure. But it looked to me, he even shot it in the stadium, potentially, because clearly the big sports teams are all in on this, too, because apparently they get a slice of it somehow. But don't lie to me and tell me that it's you're doing it because the money's going to schools. Because there, if you read it and look at my voter guide on 971talk.com, zero evidence that any money will ever go to schools anytime soon. And yeah, I explain all of that in there. You need to read up on these things before you go vote. Please, 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 please. All right. Carl's giving me a... I see people off to the
wrap
side
it up,
here.
Mark Cox.
I see Kamala's handlers giving me a hard rap. So I need to honor that. And we'll get into more of this sound from yesterday when we come back.
Well, Donald Trump, he's misguided. You say now
he's unstable. He is unstable, but
he's not well. You say he's mentally not stable.
He's not stable.
Let me ask you this. You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
Joe Biden, I have watched in from the Oval Office to the Situation Room. And he has the judgment and the experience to do exactly what he has done in making very important decisions on behalf of the American people.
She didn't know what to say. She just got done saying Donald Trump is not capable of running the United States. He's a danger. He's all over the place. Well, when did you find out Joe Biden was like that? If this is what you're claiming against Trump, exactly at what point did you realize Joe Biden shouldn't be running for president again and probably has no business being in the White House? Oh, Joe Biden's as sharp as ever. She's still claiming it.
Why has the campaign manager not rehearsed about 10 variations of an answer to that question
I don't think it matters. There's no way they haven't done that. She doesn't have the ability to regurgitate anything other than the same four or five storylines over and over again. I mean, her handlers from 20 years ago must look at this and think to themselves, my God, she hasn't improved at all. How can one individual not listen to your advisors on how to handle this question or how to handle that question? It's not that difficult. If you know, she had to know what some of the hard questions Brett Baer was going to ask because nobody else has asked them yet. She had to know he was going to follow up on the incompetence issue, on the immigration issue, on the why do you hate Donald Trump so much just because he's Donald Trump? Do you think the people that support him are stupid? Why, I would never say that. But it's the basket of deplorables. She's already described you as a deplorable if you could dare to support anybody like that. Somebody on Facebook the other day, in fact, it was a friend I worked with for years at Channel 4, and I love her to death as an individual, but she is absolutely dyed in the wool, hard left, she just has no ability to get past her hatred of Donald Trump. She reposts some meme that I'm just so tired of his face and the sound of his voice, and I just want him to go away. And somebody, one of her friends, replied to it, me too. I'm so sick of it. I can't stand it. I can't wait till he's not on the national scene anymore and blah, blah, blah. Didn't list a single negative thing that he had done. They just don't like how he looks, how he sounds, blah, blah, blah. And my comment to him was pretty simple. Wow. The party of tolerance speaks.
It's a good response.
It's the party of tolerance speaks. They're tolerant unless you disagree with them. And then you're out. Well, and they'll do anything they can do to silence you.
Then that's why they want to sit there and say, we're the party of joy. Did anybody watch that interview last night and feel joy? Because I felt rage, anger, frustration, annoyance. All the things that are whatever the opposite of joy is, that's what I felt watching that interview last night.
I don't know that she changed anybody's mind with any of it. I mean, I can't imagine that she did. Listen to Britt Hume describing this last night. He talked to Brett afterwards. Go to cut 9, please.
In terms of how well she answered your questions, which were about the very things that have been raised about her, you know, the thinness of her positions, her failure to explain her flip-flops on issues going back to when she was a candidate for president back in 2019 and 2020, she didn't give you very much, Brett, and you did a great job. And right, those are the right questions to ask. You did a good job answering them, of posing them. And she, you know, I'm sure her partisans would look at that and say, yay, Kamala, she fought you. But if people have doubts about her, I don't think that she cleared them up.
No doubt about it.
I think the people, her campaign would probably just say, well, look at her. She didn't stand for him interrupting her and treating her like that. That would be my interpretation of that interview from their perspective.
Madam Vice President, just out of interest, when you're talking about looking at the sky and seeing all the stars at once instead of just focusing on a single star, what in the hell did that actually mean? What point were you trying to get to when you go off in these word salad answers? Because somebody needs to say that to her. Your comments don't make any sense to people. You don't answer questions. You talk in vagaries about Venn diagrams. What does any of that mean? How are you unburdened by what has been? That's a Karl Marx statement. Why do you keep repeating it over and over again?
I wish I could see the list of questions Brett had planned to ask her had he had more time, the time that the campaign had agreed to give him.
Yeah.
Certainly there had to be more topics. He hit immigration hard, and rightfully so, because that comes back as one of the number one issues for people heading to the polls.
And the number one issue that Donald Trump owns her on.
Absolutely.
Is immigration. And she couldn't even take any responsibility for the deaths of those three girls that Brett brought up. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to them. But Donald Trump. That's exactly how she replied to it. Unbelievable. Hey, we'll get to Tom Ackerman coming up. Maybe talk a little baseball, a little basketball. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.